With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Le French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny BT. And we thought we'd ride the crest of the French Grand Slam wave for just a little bit longer and get yet another of France's Grand Slam winners on the show this week. So we'll bring him in very shortly. But you had another busy and tough weekend, Johnny. How's things?
Been a difficult week, obviously, with Federico Aramburu's passing last weekend in Paris. It was his funeral here in the southwest this weekend in Biarritz, and 1,500 people turned up to pay their respects to a wonderful man, to a man that wasn't from here but ended up becoming a part of here. I think that'd be fair to say. An Argentinian, very proud as well, was French nationality, and they absolutely loved him, and they turned up in massive droves to send him off properly. And it was incredibly beautiful yet tragic at the same time, if that makes sense. And the strength and the dignity of his family was quite remarkable and truly special. So now, again, moving forwards, which will be incredibly difficult for everybody, it's now rallying around his family, looking after them and all doing our part. So that's when the rugby fraternity kicks in. So hopefully there can be foundations, charities, and events coming together fairly soon and start fundraising. There are already Lecce pages in French. There are Just Giving pages in English. We'll put the links to all of those in our social brackets as well. So if you can give a little, that'll be massively appreciated by Freddie's family. So yeah, it's been a difficult week for everybody down here, but it was very important to mark a very special man. And Saturday did just that.
We will come on to the top 14 later on, but you went straight from there on the Saturday down to do Toulouse-Lyon.
Yeah, it probably wasn't my smartest professional move. I think we finished in Biarritz maybe at 3-4 in the morning, and then got a flight up to Paris to do the Toulouse game. So it was actually good, again, to mark that moment with Freddie and then try and do something different and get on with professional work. But again, the Toulouse game, they've been through it as well with the Six Nations period, with losing players to the French national side, and the ovation that those players got when they came back to the stadium was absolutely incredible. So no, it was a huge game for Toulouse and good for them to get back into winning ways. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later with our guest, but again, another massive game of top 14 rugby, and it was good to be there and be part of it.
We will come on to chatting a bit about the top 14 later on, but let's not waste any time getting our latest Grand Slam winner on. We can have a chat now with Montpellier in France second row, Paul Willemser. How you doing?
Hi guys. No, doing well. Thank you very much.
Great to have you on. And you were back down to earth and back to the day job pretty quickly last week, captaining Montpellier, scoring a couple of tries. But take us back just over a week or so. Paris, what was it like becoming a Grand Slam champion?
Yeah, it's everything I thought it would be and more. Because as soon as I started playing for the French team and at my first Six Nations tournament, I was just like thinking it will be massive if I one day get the opportunity to win this tournament. And to arrive at that moment where the final whistle blows and we've done it. And it was just amazing. Like especially with the team that we have, it made it a bit more special, like winning it with such an awesome team and staff. It was just amazing.
I know from the boys at Montpellier, you're a massive family man. So I'm not going to ask you to compare this to the birth of your kids, but was it the best day of your career?
Yeah, in my rugby career, this is definitely the best game, best win, the biggest.
And was it the biggest celebrations of your career as well?
Celebration, that was a bit difficult because we finished up really late after the game because it was a 9 o'clock game. We only arrived at the party boat or whatever at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I had my wife and my kids with me as well. So it was a bit difficult. And then we were so tired. So because I celebrated, I enjoyed my time on the field afterwards with the, you know, walking around and with the trophy and all that. So when I was finished with that, I was kind of tired. So I was like, it's going to be difficult now to keep this going for a while. But then it was just chill, but really enjoyed it in any case. But yeah, I didn't also had the responsibility of knowing that I have to come back to Montpellier the next day, get ready for another game.
Now, there's something to be said for taking your time and soaking it all up with your family. That's amazing. There's also something to be said for moving these games from 9 o'clock kickoffs because everyone's exhausted by the time you get there. It's crazy. Yeah. Greg was also quite tight-lipped. He said everyone was exhausted, but there's obviously been a few things happening. Kuyu's ended up in the Seine with the trophy. Like, what's come out like on WhatsApp groups? Have you caught up and caught up with what everyone's been up to since then?
Definitely, there's a big thing here in France with the trophy where they're saying like trying to do investigation what happened to the trophy and all that. So it was quite funny to have like a story like this with the trophy. But yeah, finally got the video footage of him jumping in the scene with the trophy. That was quite funny.
And you mentioned how special it was winning it with this particular group. You've obviously forged a real bond between you. And you were favourites going into the Six Nations. I just wonder how much of that favourites tag, because people are talking about the World Cup next year already, obviously, throwing your name in there as one of the favourites for that. How much do you speak about that pressure of being favourites and almost embracing it?
Yeah, we kind of had a little bit of a taste of it during the whole Six Nations. Whereas before we were always like a little bit of the underdogs and like, you know, trying to show if we're really the team that we think we are. But then this Six Nations, yeah, from the start, after we won against Ireland, I think that was like, okay, France is the favorite now. Let's see if they can do it. So we kind of knew every team we played against throughout the sentence, you know, like, no, France is the favorite. So we would like to win them and kind of had a little bit taste of it. And I must say, didn't have a massive impact in our preparations, all that we were aware of it. And especially with the last game against England, I think the pressure lifted a lot and you could feel that the players are comfortable and so on, but everybody knew like there's a pressure on us because we're so close now and we expected to win and all of that. But I think we handled it well and I think it will definitely help us in the same preparation for the World Cup.
I want to pick up on a word that you used there. I was about to use the word comfortable, in that when I watch you guys play, you look extremely comfortable together. So I wanted to ask you about the tactics and the coaching setup that you have, whether it's Vlok, Sean, Fabian. Like, you're very pragmatic, mature, you've got a good set piece, defense and attacking pieces all come together. So does it feel like you all know your roles, the game plan, everyone's bought into it and it's just clicking for you? Because from an outside perspective, it just looks like comfortable, at ease on the pitch with each other.
Yeah, no, exactly. We, I think, like, I believe, like, each staff member is, like, a specialist in their zone and, like, one of the best in the world at their job. Like, you're going from Karim with the lineouts, William Sawad with the scrums and, like, normal combat situations, Sean Edwards and all that, Laurent Labie. Every single guy has like a passion for their section of the game. And when they get their chance to do their video sessions and stuff, like, you kind of feel that passion and that certain like high level mentality that kind of rubs off on each player. Whereas you, in every single zone, there's like something special and where you feel like, nah, I need to do this because the expectation is really high, especially with Sean Edwards, that just kind of changed our mentality towards defense, where I think normally defense is defense and nobody, yeah, it's fine, you need to do or be careful not to get done on certain places and all that. But he kind of came and, because he's so passionate about defense, he came and changed and rubbed off on us, changed our mentality. Like, no, we're going to use this defense as an attack, as a weapon. And that's exactly with like, that's why I think with all this stuff, it really works well because expectations are high. The quality of coaching that we get is like the best.
You mentioned Sean there. It might be hard, aside from the passion, which is clear for everyone to see, it might be hard to put your finger on exactly what makes him such a good defense coach. But try if you can to tell the world what makes him so good. And also, he picked you out, didn't he, as one of a couple of players to be responsible for laying down the law to your teammates when it comes to physicality, give us an idea of what that job entails as well.
Yeah, with him, like we got on really well from the start, because obviously I could speak with him in English from the start when he was still struggling a bit with his French. But the thing that makes him special is just, like I said, his passion about defense. The thing about defense is you can be really technical and you can have all these technical stuff and game plans and all that, how you're going to handle certain situations. But at the end of the day, if you don't have that willingness or that passion to really make a statement every time you defend, then like it's just going to be a defense like every other team, and it's never going to be something special. So what I feel like what he does is like he really lifts, he shows his passion about defense, and then he gets everybody around him excited about defense. As soon as he started, like I think it was a little bit of a shock for most of the players, because his expectation on defense was like, normally you do your attacking drill and then your defensive drill and you switch off a little bit on defense because you're just going through the drills. But with him there, like there's no switching off, because he will let you know when he's not happy. So yeah, he just got everyone excited about defense and made it like a real thing to be proud of, like when we defended well. And he made sure like to show those clips of the games that we defended well, and it's like started being like a big characteristic of our team now.
It's massive. I caught up with him on the plane after the game down to Perpignan, and we just chatted for half an hour. Sean's like, you just chat rugby. He loves chatting rugby. Yeah. But he was saying, like you said, it's almost like he's unlocked a passion, because he felt like the nuts and bolts were always there. He was talking about like Gael Ficou, and he was like, the guy's an absolute freak. And he was like, look at how many people in my team can jackal. Everyone can jackal. Everyone can dominate collisions. It's just unlocking that passion. That seems to be what he's done. You can see the energy and the buzz that you have and now both sides of the ball. That's what makes it so hard to play against this French side. How much do you enjoy being part of that system, being part of those performances? Because it looks like from the outside, when you're looking in, you see the fun people are having, you're lifting each other off the ground after these big collisions and turnovers. It looks like you're having the time of your life.
Yeah, now I must say, like, I would never have thought, like, I would like at my age now, like I'm turning 30 this year. And like when I was a youngster, I would have never thought like I would enjoy my rugby as I'm doing now, like at my age. It's just incredible. When I was a youngster, you always think, no, this is rugby. I'm just playing, and people talk about you like, no, you're gonna gain more experience and all that. And what is experience? Like, I'm good now, so let's go, you know. And talking about defense, I actually was a way bigger defensive player when I was younger, when I was a bit more crazier. So it's kind of always been in my pocket. But it's only now, again, in the later part of my career, that I've reignited that love for defense again. That's the thing with the French team. Like this weekend at Montpellier, I had 13 ball carries and I scored tries and stuff in the French team. And people like ask me, like, you know, friends and rugby supporters, now why don't you carry the ball at the French team? Like, yeah, but like all the forwards are ball carriers at the French team. Like everybody's like so hungry to get a ball carrier in the French team. It's like, I'm like, no, so they don't need me there as much as a ball carrier, but I could be there in defense, because that will benefit the team way more than just adding another massive ball carrier. So yeah, I'm enjoying it so much. And the big thing now is like getting the recognition a little bit, you know, I'm getting seen now and people talking, because I've always played a real physical game, but you know how rugby is, it's all about opinions and what's being said and so on. So I've always played like the physical game, but now I'm in a situation where people actually realize it now, and also I'm getting the respect of my teammates in the French team, and in the staff. And it's really rare where you really feel the confidence from your staff, from all the staff members and all your teammates, and that kind of gives me a massive energy when I'm playing on the field, because I know all my teammates love it when I make a big hit, and the staff love it. That just gives me so much energy. So yeah, that's why I enjoy it so much at this moment.
And you mentioned that respect and recognition. We had Greg Aldrich on last week, and you get no bigger respect or recognition than this. He was up for Six Nations Player of the Championship. He said, I think Paul Willemse should win it.
No, but that's exactly like, and it's the same way. And the thing is, I feel that respect and that from every single teammate in a team, and it's the same because I respect them as well, the massive amounts. And that's what I think that makes us our team so special, is that we respect each other and we live from each other's energy. You know, like if Antoine Dupont does something amazing, like everybody's on it, like ready to go. And if Gregory has a massive carry, everybody jumps on that energy. If I make a big tackle, everybody jumps on it, because like it kind of feels like everybody gives each other their space to do what they can do, and nobody's like, nobody has a bad thoughts or bad feelings. So we feed off each other, and there's like a general respect in that team. That's incredible.
Yeah, it seems to be the positivity is breeding positivity across the board. And again, you could reflect your specialized coaching positions in almost specialized player positions. Again, you contrast the second row pairing. You've been in there with big Cameron Waukee. Can you give us a little word on him? A guy that's just moved to second row recently, a massive impact on the lineout, but you complement each other so well. So what's it been like packing down with him?
Yeah, no, I've said now for a while, if people ask me about like second line at all, I tell people now that by in today's rugby, there's only one lock left. The other one is a Lucy. So we've got in today's rugby, we've got four Lucys on the field and only one lock. He came in from playing Lucy, coming in at second rower. And then the only adjustment he really had to make is like pushing in the scrum and maybe not be as open in the play of the scrum. But I think he really adapted really well. And then the cool thing is as well, like he never once like had a bad attitude because he's not playing his position that he usually does. And I can imagine normally that would be a massive change for a player. Like if you had just, you know, you had your dreams, you want to be a Lucy for the French team. And then they say, no, you're gonna, how about you play lock? And that's the thing is like this team is so special. Like, he, without a doubt, like without even a hesitation, he said, yeah, I'm in. He's been working hard and all that. So like, I've got lots of respect for him because I know like, I think lock is probably the least enjoyable position to play on the field because you're in everything and you're expected to run like everyone. So I can just imagine for him, it wasn't easy to make that mental shift. Okay, they want me to play lock, but he's amazing. He's doing an awesome job. And I think for the team to have that extra weapon as an attacker and with his speed and using him as a lineout caller, it completes the team.
Least enjoyable position, but hardest working. So should be the highest paid, right?
Well,
speak to Moed.
I think every guy would say like the position should be the highest paid, but you're expected to push and scrum like a prop and then run like a Lucy. You know, like you inside, be as tough as a prop, you know, and but be as like intelligent as some of the Lucys, and it's just, and then you like in every single combat situation, they like the line of drives, the scrums, rucks, you in it all.
And that's developed presumably since you started playing there as well. So have you had to evolve as well in terms of your size, your playing weight, the things that you're being asked to do with this front side? It's evolved presumably your position.
With us in the team, they kind of use the big theme of our team is really to use each player on their strengths. So like if you look at our lineouts, for example, like there would some places be like I would be a lifter instead of jumping on the fence, because we've got players that their strengths are jumping in the air, like getting up in the air. So even though I can do it, my strength is lifting and then coming down to set up a good maul or a maul defense. So using each player to their strengths is a quite valuable thing. So for me, when I started with the old generation, the old staff, and that I came in, I was a little bit heavier than I am now. And when I played my first game, obviously no experience and felt a little bit late everywhere. Then my first thought was, I think I'm too heavy. I need to lose more weight. Because I came, I lost weight for the first game, and then I played and I saw, I'm still not feeling up for it. I need to lose more. So then I did, lost a bit more weight, and then I came back, and that's when we started with Fabian, that first tournament. So I think a mixture with that and then them giving me confidence by saying, listen, Paul, we're not going to talk about you are too slow or your shortages. We're going to talk about your strengths. We want you to carry the ball. We want you to make a big hit. We want you there in the scrums and in the lineout drives. And then that sort of started giving me more and more confidence, saying, okay, well, they're not like normal coaches going to chat about my weaknesses and steal all your confidence. now they're going to hammering on what I want to do, what I do good. And then that just gives you more the ability, like, okay, now I want to do more. So what do I need to do? So yeah, it's a mixture of stuff, but I think the big role of the big lock in a team, it's still the basic role, you know, like just there to hurt people.
Mate, it's an important role. Sell it up, upsell it. It's a massive role. I wanted to ask you more about Fabian. He was my coach in Montpellier and he's the best coach I got the chance to work with during 16 years rugby. I loved working with him. He was tough on some people, but as you just mentioned, it was task-based. It was rugby-focused. And basically, you did what you said. It opened up doors and you'd go through and score tries. Like, it was really simple. So for you, a little bit more in the detail, how do you find Fabian to work with and how do you find the detail in his rugby? Because I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, what I think he did well is like he got a good coaching staff around him. So I think, because I've also, like, you know, the people talk about, especially in Montpellier, that people had, everybody has something to say about him because of how he coached in Montpellier. But when I got to the French team, like, it was like you said, it was more close to what I've experienced in South Africa, where the rugby coaching is really direct and straightforward and simple and, like, really specific. You know where you're going, like, three phases after a launch. You know exactly where you are, each number. It's really technical. Like, you know, when I came to the top 14, like, it was like a bit of this notion, no, just play. You must feel it. You must feel it. You will feel it when you need to go. You know. So when I got there, I was like, I felt at home when they, like, made it a bit more specific and strict and so on. So with his coaching staff around him, have a little bit of the same mentality towards that, like the small details and stuff. I think it works really well.
You mentioned South Africa there. Obviously, looking at you now, fully entrenched in Montpellier, been in France since 2015. You're a full-blown Frenchman now, but you obviously did grow up wanting to play for the Springboks. How difficult a decision was it, winding the clock back, to switch allegiance? And am I right in saying you were pretty conflicted even when you made your debut? It was an emotional day, obviously, but those emotions almost caught you by surprise.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, that's where I think people get it wrong most of the time, because they, like, always propose it like it was a choice I made between going to South Africa or France, but it was never like that. Like, I came to France firstly just to gain a bit more experience, because I wasn't selected in a massive squad that was preparing the World Cup, I think, in 2015 with Annick Meyer. So I wasn't selected in, like, a group of 80 players. And then I thought, well, rather than playing again in the Super Rugby and Curry Cup for another 2 years, an opportunity came to me to go and play in France. And I thought, well, it's only a year and a half. I'll go and do that and come back, prepare for the next World Cup with a new coach or whatever. So I said, well, let's do it. And then when I got here, played at Grenoble first for 6 months. And then Jake White, he came to me and he said, listen, if you want to come to Montpellier, because at the same time, he signed like three of my friends that played with me at the Bulls. And I said, well, if my friends are there and stuff, like, oh, I think because I enjoy top 14 rugby. Like, that's from the first game, I felt, okay, this is my type of rugby. Like, the Super Rugby was way too quick for me. Like, every game in the Super Rugby I played, I'm like, geez, how am I going to do this for 10 years, bro? Like, this is unbelievable. I can't do this. Like, every game felt like I'm dying. So when I came to top 14, I'm like, no, this I can do for a few years. Yo. This I can do. So I enjoyed the top 14. So when Jake White came to me, I'm like, okay, yes, sweet. It's a South African coach. And then a few of my friends and stuff will be there. And then slowly, you know, I got news, but still had the dream playing for South Africa. And then slowly got the news now, South Africa's not going to choose any foreign-based players. And I was like, oh, that's like a hit in the gut. Like, what am I going to do? Because now in my career, I've really enjoyed French rugby, and I'm not going to go back playing club rugby in South Africa, because top 14, that's where I'm at. And then slowly building my life in France, and got my first child was born. My boy was born, and then I started laying down a little bit more roots in France and saying, like, I'm not going, but I still have this dream for the Springboks. But then it was a little while after my boy was born, I was like, no. It doesn't look like this South African team thing is going to work. Let's just throw something out there and see if if the coaching staff of the French team is, if they are keen, and started talking to them, and it goes, and then like, and I got excited, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try and go for the French team. I want to play international rugby, and my life's in France. I'm going to go for it. And then a few months after, the whole coaching staff got fired from the French team, and they changed like how to start from zero again. You know? But yeah, fast forward to my first cap. For me, yeah, like when I sang that first Marseillaise on for my first game, for me that was a massive moment emotionally, because I knew at that moment I had to shut down a childhood dream that I've had. Like my whole life playing for the Springboks, you know, like every South African boy. And I knew like the single moment I go out on that field, it's done, it's finished. I can never do that again. But taking the risk by saying like, but going with the French team and then opening possibly another massive door for things that I don't know, possibilities that I don't know. And yeah, luckily I did, because at the moment I'm really happy and I've never regretted my choice to play for the French team ever.
It's been an amazing journey already. And you said, you talked about being one of the old guys, age 30, and I nearly fell off my chair. 30.
Yeah, but you need professional rugby. The players are getting in younger, bro.
Exactly. But at the same time, like you just mentioned, that childhood dream is finished, but now you're living another dream, which yes, looks incredible. You're having an amazing time, but there's a real possibility that France could square off against South Africa in 2023. That's a possibility, right? Emotionally there, having closed and turned that page on the South African dream, how would it feel, be it a World Cup or in future months or in November Test series? How would it be? Obviously, your family's still very much South African back home. They come over and visit all the time Montpellier. It must be an amazing yet emotional fixture to look forward to when it happens.
Yeah, no, actually, we are playing them this November. I know that because it's going to be...
You've looked ahead.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like most of the players there I've played with or against when I was in South Africa. And with the same with the SA Under 20 team, there's a few players that played with me in the SA Under 20 team when we won the World Cup in 2012. So they know me and I know them. And then in the Super Rugby and Currie Cup, I played against all of them and they played against me. So I don't know what emotional state I will be in or like what will happen, but I know it's not going to be just another match. It will be a special one for me. It's been in my back of my mind, you know, like, but I know the way my South African culture, the way I know is like we, same in the top 14, when you play against other South Africans, we play even harder because, you know, you kind of want to win that respect. So I know for a fact that I will be up for that game.
We'll all be wincing in November, Johnny.
Yes. Ready for it already.
I've put in a few big hits on a few of those players, so they know me.
And just quickly, you mentioned that obviously Heineken Meyer left you out of that squad initially, and then you had conversations before you made your France debut with the French coaching staff about putting your name out there. So presumably around that time, you also had more conversations with the SIRU or the coaching staff over there saying, I'm here if you want me. And presumably the answer was no. Like you say, unless you come back to South Africa, you're not being considered.
Yeah, well, the thing is like I've never had even one conversation with South African rugby. Like I was in the media here, it came out that I'm potentially going to play for the French team. And then you'd expect like if he was available, somebody would contact me and say, listen, or my agent at least say, listen, tell Paul to maybe just wait a bit or whatever. And it's a long journey because later on they changed the rule that I had to do my passport first. So I did that as well. And that's a long process. But yeah, through my whole career, like I never had one single conversation with SA Rugby or anyone. So at the end, like I was kind of led into my French career, like because that's why I say like that's what it means. What I say, I've never like had to make a choice, either South Africa or the French team. It's like I kind of my life just went that direction. But yeah, as soon as I made that decision, I said, okay, well, doesn't matter what happens now, even if South Africa contacts me now, like the day I made the commitment that I'm going to go for it, I said, okay, now I'm committed, I'm going to go for it. So even though they didn't speak to me, if they did, in any case, like the year before, I would have still said no. Like, but yeah, they never spoke with me, so I never had a conversation with them.
Their loss. French rugby's game.
On that note, though, like I had one interview where they asked me about it. And then I actually said in the interview, but the thing is with South Africa is actually they are so blessed with massive amounts of talents on the lock position. It never felt like they needed me because they have like four or five massive locks, world-class locks. And then I said in the interview, South Africa doesn't need me, but I also don't need them.
Yes, nice.
That pissed off a few people.
I wanted to ask you about the process of coming into a French squad. So obviously living in France and learning French, there's histories of South Africans like working their way down around international rugby teams all over the world. Like I'm Scottish, a few guys I played with, absolute legends. And then in France, you've had obviously Peter de Villiers, Rory Cockett, Scott Spedding, a long line. But is it a little bit more difficult? Because I've always felt, you know, when South Africans coming in and integrating, and it's easy because most of the sort of English either is their first or second language, then I always figured with France, with the language barrier, maybe a more cultural barrier as well, did you find it more difficult at first integrating into the French national setup, or was it easy straight from the off?
No, it was really difficult. For me personally, it was really difficult. But the problem is, even if you explain it to the French players or the French coaching staff and stuff, they would never really understand what you're going through, you know? Because there's like these small details, small things that makes it really difficult. But I kind of saw it like this is the sacrifice you need to make, you know, like because I'm sure like if I played with I was actually talking about this with one of my friends the other day, and I was, because he was seeing that we invited some French singers and so on to come to our camp, and then we have like an hour discussions with them, and it's like, I was like, oh, so do you know those singers, and do you know the songs, and because like everyone's like singing together, and I told them, well, no, like I didn't grow up like these guys. I wasn't in like had the same childhood as them and grew up with certain film stars or singers and so on. So I'm sitting there in the meeting room, and everyone's like, they're talking about these things that I don't have a cooking clue about. They're singing these songs, and I'm like, I'm so keen to take part. Like I want to be a part of this, but like, you kind of feel left out. But that's the thing, like I had to, like when I made my choice to play for French team, I knew like, listen, this is not going to be the same like as if you play for the Springboks, where like everybody grew up like you understand everyone's, you understand the background, and like, you take part in all these little small things and enjoy it in a other way. So I knew like this, it's going to take some sacrifices, it's not going to be the same way. But for me and the French team, like I knew without a doubt that all the players respect me, even though I fall a bit short with these things that I've missed. But I never feel like I needed to have some sort of recognition or something like that. So yeah, it's frustrating sometimes for me not to be able to take part in every single thing in the team. And I feel like I miss out sometimes. But I see it as my sacrifice I need to make to be a part of this team. And I'm happy to do it. But it is difficult. It's really difficult because it's all these small things and you can't explain it. Like you're telling to someone, no, I didn't feel it bothered me that I couldn't sing the same songs. You know, like if you in a team, they won't understand it. Like, well, you mean this? No, man, that worries, it's just a song. But it's just one of those things you can't have your bread buttered on both sides.
And you mentioned your upbringing being different, obviously, and that being difficult. We do want to look ahead rather than look back. But the last time to look back, is this right that when you were a kid, you refused to wear a replica Springbok jersey, be in the tunnel at Loftus-Versfeld, that kind of thing, because you were like, I want to do it for real for the first time?
Yeah, I know exactly. Like that's, yeah, one of my cool things that happened to me when I was younger. Like I played for Namibia. My parents split up. My mom grew up in Namibia, so I went back to Namibia, lived with her. And then I played there, and then we did a tour in South Africa. So I stayed in South Africa, went to Namibia for 1 year, and then went back. So when I grew up in South Africa, like the Bulls were my team. Victor Matfield was my idol. Like the Bulls was everything for me. And that was like my ticket. I'm going to play for the Bulls today. So when I was 17, yeah, we had a camp, and we had a tour. We came to Pretoria, and then we did like a tourist visit of Loftus, of the stadium and all that. And then we went in there and we went into the locker rooms, and we went into the locker room as a tourist. And I was there and I was feeling so uncomfortable. I'm like, this feels like sacred. Like I was even mad that the other teammates of my school team were like in this locker room. I was like, no, this is not right. Like I felt uncomfortable. And I'm like, no, this must be sacred, because they were like so big in my head, like this Bulls team, like they were awesome. So we got out and we were walking down a tunnel to go onto the field. And then I just said, no, I'm not going to spoil this as well. I want the first time that I run out of this tunnel to be when I play for the Bulls the first time. So I had to walk around the whole stadium to come in from side entrance. And I did, like, so I ran around because I didn't want the guys to see that they will think I'm crazy or whatever. So I ran around, come from the other side, and nobody actually noticed. And then, yeah, surely enough, the first time I ran out of the tunnel is when I played for the Bulls a few years later. And then it was really special for me. Like, it's a small thing. And I don't think for other people it might be stupid, but for me, it was like, I'm going to do this. And it's the same with the jersey. Like, I've never wore a supporters jersey in my life for the Bulls or the Springboks. And then the first time I wore the Springbok jersey was for the under-20s. It's just a small thing. But yeah, that's exactly what I did.
I imagine that's very similar to you, Johnny.
Yeah, the exact same.
You probably grew up in the Murrayfield Tunnel and with the Scotland jerseys all over the place.
I was sneaking my way in. I was trying to sneak cigarettes. I was doing everything wrong. I was just,
well, there we go.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And just quickly, you mentioned your break in France was Grenoble. We had Bernard Jackman on not so long ago, and he was your coach there, wasn't he? How did you like Bernard?
Yeah, well, that kind of time in my career is such a blur, you know, because I understood nothing, like no French at all. Basically, my life was just going to training and then going home and then maybe going to a restaurant. Like, you know, the first few months here is the toughest in France. Like adapting and all that. So I only spent 6 months there, and it was the winter. And it's the first time in my life that I saw the snow, and it was everywhere, bro. It was white. Like, I couldn't believe it. I started the first game, Bernard Jackman's like, no, Paul, listen, you're going to start this weekend. We're playing against Toulon at Mayol. Be ready. And I was like, okay, I'm ready. Looking at the team, and then you got John Smith, Bucky's Buerta, all those guys. I'm like, oh, okay, this is top 40 now. Let me go. So yeah, then he let me lose that first game, and I played well. And it was also a massive moment for me, that first game. So during the game, I had one moment where I tackled John Smith, and I gave him like a proper tackle, you know, taking him backwards, a signature tackle. And then after the game, because like John Smith, Bucky's Buerta is like my heroes as well. And then after the game, those two, I walk up to them, like just want to shake their hands and say, thank you guys, oh, it's awesome to play against you. And then John Smith is like, yes, bro, you can't kill us old guys like that. Hey, and then Bucky's Buerta is like, yeah, I told you about it before the game. I told you, you must be careful. He can smoke you.
That must have been awesome.
Oh, bro, that was the best feeling like I've ever had, like best compliment ever, to have these two legends talk about me like that. And that was my first taste in it. And then I was like, okay. And then, so yeah, with Bernard Jackman, played well. He gave me a lot of compliments and stuff. And when I started playing, he just told me, listen, boy, I like your attitude, like your aggressivity. So I also got a lot of compliments from him while I was playing. And I was just a bit sad that I had to, like, because at the end, it was me that broke up my contract with Grenoble to go to Montpellier. But at that time, I just got married. And it was the first time, like, me and my wife, like, we got married. And then the next day, we left for Grenoble. So it was difficult for her. She did her studies. And when I got there, now she's doing nothing. She was studying accounting. Now she couldn't use a degree or nothing. So, and then we didn't have lots of friends. We were still a young couple. And the other South Africans that were there were really old. We were friends with Albertus Buckle, also a South African player, and his family. And then they left the next season. So it started being difficult for my wife. And then it's like, that was like my first big decision I had to make as a husband or a family guy now, is not just to think about myself, but I had to think about my wife as well.
It's a cool honeymoon destination, Grenoble. Not many South Africans go there for honeymoon. The very next day, you've never seen snow. Here you go.
Yeah. I always joke with my wife. I tell her, like, yeah, what do you mean we didn't have a honeymoon? I took you to France. Like, you've been on a honeymoon for 7 years now.
And mate, so obviously it's worked out for the best. Like Montpellier now, you seem settled. The team is flying compared to where you were last season. A little bit of difficulty. Philippe Saint-André's come in and salvaged the club, it would seem. So what's the difference been? And how good a job has he done as a new head coach?
Yeah, no, the problem I think with our club for a long time was that we changed coach every 2 years. We didn't have a position like we have now with the director of rugby, where that Philippe Saint-André is playing now. So it meant like every time the coach got fired or left, like the whole system, the whole rugby identity, everything left as well. There wasn't somebody that stayed that had like a long-term plan. So it meant like every 2 years we have to start restart, and a new coach comes in, and then he brings in a few of his players, and he has his rugby identity and mentality. And then it takes 1 year to adapt. And then the second year, it's tough. And then, yeah, the pressure of the top 14 and all that. So with Philippe Saint-André, when he came in, I think the best thing that he's done is his recruitment. Like he's done some really good signings for the team. And he's starting to make sure, like, we're not just buying the stars, but we're buying the position, the players in the positions that we need.
Is that quite similar to the France setup then, in a way, where Philippe Saint-André is like the Fabien Galtier, and then you've got his specialist sort of coaches underneath and he oversees everything?
Yeah, but I think with Fabien, he's a bit more hands-on. Philippe Saint-André, he's guiding a bit more from a distance, because now with our coaching staff, we've got Olivier Azamba, who's like plays forwards coach, and then Jamba Alized, that's doing the backs. So they're working together now, and then we've got him from a little bit off distance. He's not like as hands-on during the week, but he's more valuable in games and bigger decisions. And so far it's been working really well. But I think as well, like, because we've got a core group that went through those difficult times together, it's made the team also quite tight. There's also no more talking about too many foreigner players or South Africans in the team and all that, because your people like to throw that in our faces, like when Jake was there and just after Jake.
Looking back over those different staffs, you had Jake White, then you had Vern Cotter, Xavier Garbajosa, Philippe's come in. And like you said, it's almost weird when you have a core group that's been through the mill and they just crave a bit of stability and they think, right, we've got a decent coaching team and let's stick with this and let's perform. You mentioned the names. So Olivier Ozam, Jean-Baptiste Elisald, Bruce Rihanna's in there as well, isn't he?
Bruce, yes, Bruce is there as well.
Could you give us a little insight into the different personalities and the different responsibilities they have in terms of specifics within the squad?
And then we also have Alex Ruiz, the old top 40.
Of course,
yes. Referee turned defence coach, right?
Yeah. So we've got Olivier Zam, that's more like with the forwards, you know, the scrums, lineouts, forward attacking play. And then we've got Chamba, that's a bit backs, a little bit kicking game, and also in the beginning he did more defense, now a bit less. And then we've got Bruce, that's like a skills coach now for us. It's like general skills, you know, for the backs, kicking, passing, or for us all for that. And then we've got Alex Ruiz, who's more about the breakdown zone, stealing, clearing out, you know, also like tackling. And like I said, it works well enough. But I think a big part of it is, like you said, is the team really. In Montpellier, we've never been as tight as we are now as a team. And we've went through some really difficult times. So now, yeah, it's awesome playing now with this team. Because now, in the past, we would always lose a game like in the last 20 minutes, 30 minutes, we'd fall off. And now it kind of feels like now we go to bring out the game from the dead, from the depths there at the last 20 minutes and go. And that always means something special if a team can is able to do that and not just give up. So we've got something special. Still need some polishing and by that will come by time. And hopefully we've got a few players that are coming back as well from injury. And that we've lost big names. So hopefully we can use that momentum for the end of the season.
You mentioned Alex Ruiz there. As a big second row enforcer, be honest with us. When you heard a referee was coming in to coach you, what did you think?
Yeah. No, I definitely was like, I'll just see how this goes. I'm not all in yet, but I need to see what's have a chat, yeah. Because it might be my chance to get all my frustrations of referees out on him first few training sessions.
You can't, bro. Now that you're a captain, you can't behave like that anymore. And we mentioned right at the start that you won this weekend over Biarritz and you captained Montpellier for the first time. How big an honor for you was that?
It was one of the biggest honors for me in my French career. Like it's up there. That's one of the best things because it's been a while that I've played for this team. And like for me, I feel like I've sacrificed a lot for this team. And I've always been here and always giving it my all through everything that went through this club. And like I'm one of the few players left that really went through everything. I just didn't experience Fabien Galthié. But after that, like I went through everything and then, for me, it's special. Like, and it was really frustrating in a one part where we had lots of South Africans in the team, and then like they put me in the same box as like all the South Africans, or they put all the South Africans in the same box. But I was there making a massive effort with my language, considering playing for the French team, wanting to build my family, like really committed, and it kind of didn't got seen because with all the South Africans that were there. So I got, and then as well, you can't build a relationship with the coaching staff if it changes every 2 years, you know. And that was also difficult. So when a new coach comes, they kind of forget about everything you've already done for the club. It starts when they start. So for me to be captain, it's like I can't even explain it. After the game, they asked me the same question, and I got a little bit of emotional when they asked the question because for me it's such a great honor. Like for me personally, I love having a responsibility and I love having people relying on me because I know like I want to show my whole team like that. It doesn't matter what happens, like don't worry, Paul will be there. You'll be up for it.
And so far, you've got 100% win record as captain. My old mate, my old captain of Montpellier is also retiring at the end of the year. Fufu, he's hanging up his boots. So would you stick your hand up? Would you like to do the job on a permanent basis?
Yeah, definitely. The thing that just makes it difficult is like every time I leave for the French team, I'm not there with the club. And that was kind of the difficulties a bit earlier with the new coaching staff that we spoke about. And when they start talking about me in a leadership position, that's why they cornered a little bit. They asked other players to captaincy as well because, they said, listen, we love you to be there, but it's going to be difficult if you're not part of the whole thing and so on. So that makes it a bit difficult, but I'm all in. Like for me, it will be if I'm captain, doesn't matter for how long or whatever, it will be the biggest honor for me to be the captain. And I'll take that responsibility 100%. But if I'm not, I'm still going to do my job.
And how did you find out you were going to be captain? You mentioned how much of an honor it is. Did Philippe make a big gesture of it? And also, Johnny mentioned it was a big win, 100% record as captain so far, but you were 22-14 down at halftime. Yeah. You scored a couple of tries yourself, so leading by example. But yeah. What was that halftime speech like? You're first as skipper, you're losing 22-14. How'd it go?
No, for me, it was just like, obviously, it's a bit more stress when you do your first like professional game as captain. Like, it's something new. So with your experience, you kind of get like in the rhythm of things. And now, like a top 14 game for me, it's not as big as it was in the beginning, you know. So I prepare and I'm up for it, but I don't get stressed. But now, as a captain, it's something new. So I got a little bit of those butterflies that you've haven't had in a long time. We got that back. So we started the game, and then everything went south. And I was like, okay, no, this is it's not a start I was hoping for. Felipe just in the beginning of the week came up to me and says, okay, Paul, listen, you've been like the combat leader or whatever, vice captain a few times now, but we want you to be the captain this weekend. Really proud. And I said, yeah, okay, I'm up for it. But yeah, started the game, didn't go as planned. And then halftime, well, I just knew, like, for me, an important thing was just to not change what I've been doing, like, not to start now trying to give the biggest Braveheart speech I can of my career. Like, you know, like, I said, no, just stick to the simple stuff. Just be like I like to stay neutral and not get emotional, because I feel like if you get emotional, you kind of lose the plot and then make mistakes and you're not as clear-headed. So I try to stay neutral, just with the simple stuff. But obviously, Philippe and Andre, he was having a go at the guy, so I let him do his thing. And then when we got out, I said, like, okay, we know what we need to fix. Let's go do it. But then I knew as well, like, we kind of had a massive bench coming on second half. So I was like kind of relying on them to come and bring a little bit more energy and stuff. So I was looking at the highlights of the game, and I was first half, I was in it. I could see, like, every time I concentrated. And then when we scored, I think the second last try, you could see me like, now I'm smiling a bit. Okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be all right.
It all works out in the end. And just quickly before we let you go, perfectly on the way this weekend. So you skipper again, or are you getting a rest after a big Six Nations period and ahead of a big home and away clashes against Quins in Europe, of course?
Yeah, no rest for me yet. So I'll probably play again. I'll play again this weekend and probably be the captain again this weekend. No holiday yet, so I still need to grind a little bit more. Hopefully I'll get some off days in the coming weeks. But I saw with the Champions Cup, we'll see how that goes. Maybe it'll be a weekend available that we will use. But there's only 5 games left of the top 14. And we've kind of have like our team's objectives of how many points we want to reach with these last games to stay at the top of the league. So, that's our objective and we need to achieve that. But yeah, that's the rugby. Yeah, there's always an objective. There's always something to work towards.
No rest for the wicked, but massive congratulations on a huge few weeks. Grand Slam, captaincy, taking over from Fufu next year, according to Johnny. And thanks ever so much for coming on and telling us all about it. Cheers, Paul.
No, thank you very much, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot, mate. Legend. Catch you soon.
Cheers, boys.
How good was that to have Paul on? And very honest. Not obviously, we think of him as a fully-fledged Frenchman now, even though we know his past, but very honest about fitting in.
Really admirable candor. It's not every day you'll get that. And it must be difficult. I've always thought that, like, even coming to Scotland or going to Ireland is difficult. But I've always thought the language barrier and the cultural barriers because of the language must make it so hard. And so, yeah, I can picture him sitting in those meetings. And again, some of that, like, the actor they had is really famous. He's a massive French rugby fan, Jean Dujardin, who's been in, like, The Artist and loads of different things in English as well. But if you haven't been around him growing up, you wouldn't know. The singer was Francis Cabrel. And I only know that because Fufu, who was my captain at Montpellier, made me listen to a song after way too much wine one night in Montpellier. So, like, there was no way you would get these cultural references if you hadn't grown up here. But amazing to see, again, how he's grown in his journey over time, but also how he's grown into the role. Like, he's an absolute, and like we overuse it, enforcer, like a back. But that's what he is. The physicality and what he brings now to this French team and Montpellier in a leadership role, he's just been exceptional. So great to have him on. Lovely big guy, but really appreciate his honesty. But now clearly fitted in and he's doing so well. Grand Slam winner. He's cracked it. He's done all right.
Right. It's about time we did our meter moment of the week, isn't it? So take it away, Johnny.
This week it comes from La Rochelle versus Racing, and they went coast to coast,
quite freakishly, Jeremy Sanzel turns the ball over on his 5 meter line, rips the ball off Luke Jones, back row or second row, which he will not want to see again. And then it was like watching something out of Super Rugby. They could normally, or if Paul was captain, they'd have kicked the ball out. But they didn't. They chucked the ball behind their own try line and ran it out. And it was ridiculous. The gasp by Raymond Rule links with Brice Doulin and booger it. And Thomas Bergin goes over. A class piece of play and easily the meat of the moment for this week in the top 14, coast to coast for La Rochelle, and a fairly freakish try. It was awesome.
Out of character from the rest of the game as well. The only try in the game.
Yeah. But that's the magical part, in that it was a little bit out of the blue. I think it was Popolan, the replacement 10, that decided to chuck the ball Carlos Spencer-esque behind his own try line. But that's what you need. He's an X-factor player, trying something a little bit different, going a bit off script, adding a bit of spark to the game. And it certainly was a magical moment. So definitely and easily our meter moment of this weekend's top 14 action.
There we go. That was Johnny's Meter Moment of the Week. And Meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 11 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full-price item with the code FrenchPod10 at checkout as well. And on top of that, we've been running a competition on social media to win two tickets to both the Champions and Challenge Cup finals in Marseille in May. So do you want to do the big reveal, Johnny?
Yeah, why not? Congratulations to Santiago Garcia Guillen, who'll be taking his mate to Marseille for a long weekend. And he also, I love this, because he commented on social media and said, this is the mate I'm taking. His friend has then commented underneath saying, mate, you can't do that. Your missus will divorce you. You're going to get your balls booted. You have to take her. You can't take me. So now you absolutely are taking your best mate. Your missus was probably going to lose you to either a sofa or a bar because you'd be watching it with your mates anyway. So now you can get there in person. Thanks to us. Enjoy it with one of your best mates and have an amazing weekend of rugby in Marseille. Santiago, enjoy it. It's on us.
There we go. Congratulations, Santiago. And a full explanation of why we've picked you as well. We hope your relationship is still intact at the end of it. But if not, blame Johnny Beattie.
And that's also an inkling to everyone else in future competitions. Get grafting in there. Say you need a weekend away from your missus and we'll sort it out for you.
Excellent. And let's have a brief chat about the top 14 before we go as well. Some of the other action. You mentioned the La Rochelle game there. We spoke to Paul about Montpellier. You covered the game on Sunday night. Toulouse were able to bring five Grand Slam winners off the bench, and the clip of Antoine Dupont has done the rounds. He was pretty impressive when he came on.
The boy's a machine. And weirdly for Toulouse, without their stars, they've looked really shorn of confidence. They lost six on the bounce when they were away, and it was really difficult. But the ovation that those boys got when they came off the bench at the weekend was incredible. Marchand, Crow, Dupont and Tamac. And they just did enough. Again, it wasn't an easy game. Lyon were actually very well organized and hard to break down, but that will do them so much for their confidence. The fact that it hasn't been there and they've lost these tight games, but these guys are now back. And this now is the race for them to finish as high up as they can in the top 14 for the playoffs. And so they just got over the line. Again, Julien Marchand basically changed the game with an awesome line break with Antoine Dupont, who was playing like Hulk again. The guy just doesn't stop. But yeah, you get the feeling that they just need a bit of confidence back in camp. These guys to bring it back from Six Nations, confidence, and move on slowly. But as Paul alluded to, there's only five games left. I say build slowly. They've got five games left to finish as high up as they can. And certainly with the standards that are being bought back from the French camp, a top two finish, is that possible? I don't know, but certainly to try and get home quarter will be their objective.
Speaking of Toulouse, Leon, we've spoken about this fullback situation for next season at Toulouse before. Yeah. It's not confirmed yet, but Melvin Jaminet has been linked with Toulouse for God knows how long. Ange Capuzzo is reportedly going there as well. If those two do both go there, is Tom Ambrose going to Leon?
Well, of what I've seen, what I've heard, I don't want to drop names, but people that have told me is that he's actually signed an extension already. Tom Ramos, okay. But it hasn't been released in the press. Again, with Zach Combs leaving, him way up to Bordeaux, they're going to need a second string 10 when Intermac isn't there. So it looks like Tom Ramos is going to be pushed more into potentially a second string standoff role. That's where he played in cup final against La Rochelle last season as well and did an outstanding job. But yeah, Melvin Jamin is kind of rumbling on in that he said that he would like to make a break in his contract. The Perpignan president's come out and said, look, he's got a job to do. If we go down and we're relegated, that becomes automatic. But at the minute, I think there's conversations going on behind closed doors as to if they don't get relegated, what will Toulouse have to pay out in terms of compensation to break his contract and get him there next season? And then, as you mentioned, the new Italian starlet as well, who is Gif potentially joining as well. So look, Toulouse again are going to be fully loaded, it looks like, next season.
And Toulon as well had another good win over Clermont. 5 wins in their last 7 now. Perhaps more interestingly, we're hearing that friend of the show, Sergio Parisse, might be staying on. It's always one more year, isn't it? One more year. And he kind of has in the back of his mind that he might want to finish at the 2023 World Cup, even though he hasn't played since the last one for Italy.
Why not? Like, the guy's still playing well. If mentally he's still got the desire to do it, do another year. Like, he's still playing at a high level every time he takes the field for Toulon in a difficult situation. They haven't been terrific, especially the first 6 months of the season, but the guy still performs week in, week out. He's setting out a map. It hasn't worked from over the past 12, 24 months with the Italian side, but potentially now some sort of contractual arrangement where he plays for Toulon and is registered. And then if he gets to go, he gets released and he gets to finish with Italy at the World Cup, which would be just what he deserves because he's been absolutely phenomenal to watch for decades, really. But even more so this season, he's backing it up week in, week out. So fair play. It's phenomenal. And he'd be 40, as you mentioned, just after the World Cup. But yeah, he's still playing like he's 30, which for me isn't old, as we've already mentioned earlier in the show. So fair play.
And another number 8, at the other end of the age and experience scale, but Jordan Joseph scored a hat-trick for Pau in their win over Perpignan. Could he be one of the players that obviously goes to Japan with France, shines there, and maybe sticks his hand up as a real claim for a place at the 2023 World Cup?
Potentially. I mean, he's been so good since moving to Pau. Performances have been great. The difficulty is going to be getting into that World Cup squad is going to depend on injuries because you've got Olivon coming back to fitness. There's another spot. Jolonch is going to be moved across, potentially as another 8. You've got Tolofua as well, who's performed at 8 for France. So the question is he better than those guys that you've currently already got in there and are absolutely flying? Could he be a bolter? I think a lot of water still to under the bridge, but the way he's been performing this season has been a massive step up. But can he do it consistently over the next 12 months? That will define whether he goes or not. But it would be really interesting. I think he'd be a good shout as a bolter to go on this summer tour and gain some experience with the coaching setup that France have and potentially the World Cup. Who knows? But there's a lot of rugby still to be played between now and then.
And finally, Derby weekend in the top 14 this weekend, isn't it, really? So any in particular that stand out?
I'll be up working at Racing in Stade Francais, which is massive. One on a personal note that I love being part of was Cast Toulouse as well. That is an enormous game of rugby, especially when it's in Cast and you've got all of Toulouse's rock stars coming back. And then Bordeaux against La Rochelle is possibly the biggest one in the clash for top 6 places as well. Two sides that have battled really after starting the season in great shape, but over the past 6 weeks have really toiled. And that's without losing too many big names. So Bordeaux-La Rochelle, I think, is probably the biggest clash and probably going to be the most interesting game this weekend. And then obviously Paul's going to be down in Perpignan in the Catalan region with Montpellier. So look, there's loads of huge games to look forward to this weekend.
Can't wait for those. Thanks, Johnny. A big thanks to Paul Willemser for joining us and a massive thanks to all you guys for listening as well. Hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can as well. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube, and we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
Cheers, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.